Sorry, where'd the idea come from?
I'm general manager of a kind of a sports recreation club out in Sharjah. So it's an emirate beside Dubai. I was very busy. I was working 8 hours a week. It was full on and your nutrition suffers. So I started using a meal prep company. It was poor. It wasn't great. Used another one. Wasn't great. I was working with some really good guys in the kitchen. I brought some stuff into them. I was like, guys, we could do better than this. We can do so much better than this. I was like, listen, our kitchen is down at night, not using anything. If we rent the kitchen off you, we'll give you X, Y, and Z. We get a few guys in and start it off.
Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast with me, Gary Fox, and welcome to our second in our Middle East special series. Today, we're with Owen Cantwell, the founder of Fit Meals. This episode comes with a serious warning that it is going to break your frame of reference when it comes to running your business. Owen was kind enough to give me a full tour of his factory. He showed me everything. Not only did he show me everything, he showed me his books. He showed me his turnover, his profit, his loss, and even how much profit he shares with his staff. Owen embraces open book management, and he's going to give you a masterclass in it today. Here's my chat with Owen Cantwell, the founder of Fit Meals. It takes courage and belief in yourself and your business idea to take the step to set up your own business. In the early stages, entrepreneurship can be a lonely road, even through those milestone moments. Deciding to commit to the idea you've been mulling over, learning, growing, and developing your skills, building a team to help you along the way, preparing to launch into new markets. Enterprise Ireland is there for all of those startup moments. From providing advice and guidance to new founders through our startup network, to pre-seed funding and early investment, we're here to help bring your ambition to fruition. To find out how Enterprise Ireland can help you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Nostra, an Irish IT company, offers world-class managed IT services, cloud solutions, IT support, and more, all tailored to meet your business needs. Whether you're streamlining operations or boosting productivity, their expert team is ready to help. Visit nostra.ie or email info@nostra.ie to see how they can solve your IT challenges today. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to share a game changer for your business, Azure Communications. When it comes to print and marketing solutions, these folks, led by CEO Jenny Johnston, are the real deal. Whether you need an eye-catching brochure, sleek business cards, or a full-blown digital campaign, Azure Communications has you covered. They're not just about high-quality prints or digital campaigns, they're also about delivering great results. And here's the best part. Just for listeners of The Entrepreneur Experiment, you can get 20% off your first order. Just give them a call or go online and use the code FOX20. With personalized service and fast turnaround times, Azure Communications will help you make the impact your business deserves. Trust me, when it comes to making your brand stand out, Azure Communications is the provider of choice. Check them out at azurecom.ie. Use code FOX20. Elevate your marketing game today.
Owen, welcome to the pod.
Gary, thank you for having me.
My Dubai studios.
Yeah, very, very nice. Yeah.
It's very slick. I am enjoying being here.
You are loving being here.
It's not only me. I am. I'm here a week now.
You are Christmas morning here.
I creamed my dinner last night. I sent that to my friend in Abu Dhabi. I was like, I've gone fully native. I've creamed my dinner. I got home from like meeting people and it's like 7:30. My wife was out with her daughter. I was like, I just don't want to leave the apartment again.
Yeah.
Beep, boop. And 30 minutes later, knock, knock. It's wild.
City of convenience.
It's
unreal. It doesn't take you long to get into it.
I laughed when she told me that.
Yeah.
Someone said, oh, I need to get like paracetamol. They're like, Kareem. I was like, I'm not paying someone to drop a box of paracetamol. I can see the pharmacy. They're like, give it a few days. And I was like, yeah,
it's true. Peer pressure. You see everyone else doing it. You're like,
but it's a wild city. I've never seen a city like it in terms of convenience.
Unbelievable. But people build businesses just off convenience. They were stuffed to the door.
What a lovely tangent, eh?
Here goes.
It's like we knew what we were doing here. What do you do?
So we're Fit Meals. We make healthy premium meals that are delivered fresh to your door. We started off in 2020, started operations in 2020. And basically what we do is customer journey, website, go on, make it as easy as possible for people to go on to pick their meals for the week, to pick their meals for the month if they want to, and go on and pay, and we deliver to your door fresh. It's ready to eat. You just heat it up and off you go. Or if it's a cold dish, you eat it cold. Very simple, but a lot goes behind that. There's a lot that goes on to getting a really quality premium meal, nutritionally balanced, to your door. So
I went to you kindly offered me a tour of your facility the other day. It blew my mind.
Yeah.
I'm a nerd for like processes and logistics. How does this work? And I'm like, it just blew my mind. Mm. Like there is so much. Because I think we actually have lost sight of what goes into making really good food.
Absolutely. And it changes. You know, there's so much technology out there, so much software that can help you with food. You know, every month we are looking at our standards procedure, our processes, and trying to get it better. Like that's our second facility. The first one we used the kitchen at night while we were getting set up. The old founder mode kind of work two jobs, use the kitchen at night and get going. And this one was built in July 2021. And right now it's nearly five times at the capacity it was built for.
Ooh.
So we are running that 24/7. It is, if it was a human, it would tell you stop.
Literally 24/7.
Yeah, 24/7. Yeah, absolutely. There's a downtime on a Friday of 4 to 5 hours, just get the maintenance team in, get the machines cleaned, as in the techniques of it, get the mechanics up and running again, get all our kitchen hoods deep cleaned, all that kind of stuff, and then goes again, off we go.
It's a beast. Like I came home and I was talking to my wife about it. I was like, there's just so many moving parts.
Huge.
I was thinking about it. I was like, there's just so many things that go into it. About like from this to this, this. We'll dig into it now. But I want to talk about where this come from. Like 2020. It's so funny. So many entrepreneurs and talking to us like, oh, 2020, we started the business. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
After before.
Oh, before.
Right.
Yeah, before, during, and after, thankfully.
So what happened? Like,
so
I'm sorry, where did the idea come from?
Yeah, so 2019. So I'm general manager of a kind of a sports recreation club out in Sharjah. So it's an emirate beside Dubai. And I started using the meal prep. Just again, I was very busy. I was working 8 hours a week, a really, really good job. And I had a really good chairperson over me as well, gave me really good business insight. So I had a really good idea of running the business with good autonomy.
What was the bit?
So we were like, for all the world, like a country club. We'd rugby pitches, restaurant, gym, swimming pool, tennis courts, like that. So it was a kind of an expat club for, it was kind of a club for expats in Sharjah. So it was a really cool place to work in, met some amazing people. And again, it was a 24/7 job, you know. It was a lot there. There was nearly 1,000 members, a lot of moving parts, let's say. So it was full on, and your nutrition suffers. Even though there's a restaurant and stuff there, you know yourself, you're going in, you're just, oh yeah, give me that, give me that, give me that. So I started using a meal prep company. It was poor. It wasn't great. Used another one. Wasn't great. I was working with some really good guys in the kitchen. I brought some stuff into them. I was like, guys, we could do better than this. I was like, it doesn't even have to, like, we can do so much better than this. So I talked to our chairperson. I was like, listen, our kitchen is down at night, not using anything. Can we rent the kitchen off you? We'll give you X, Y, and Z. We get a few guys in and start it off. Very simple. When you look back at it now, like, not poor, but a very simple customer journey start off. And spent about 6 months getting it up and running, getting our menus together, getting the nutrition together, getting the website together. You know yourself.
So you were learning from scratch, really, were you? Have you any background in like food or prep apart from managing the country club?
No. Just in like, we'd have had a restaurant manager and things like that. So I'd have, you know, used them and things like that. And obviously we'd have had a kitchen on site and things like that. But no, it was very much...
So you had an overview, but maybe not.
An overview. Okay. But, you know, ask my wife, I'm not a good cook. I will not be making these meals anytime soon. But I know good chefs, which is key.
And I know what good tastes like most importantly.
Exactly. Right. So we had a really good core team to start with. And we just did a couple of prototypes. Literally delivered to some friends, I said, listen, what do you think? They're like, yeah, I love it. I would buy that. I was like, well, how much would you pay for it? You know?
So what, this is the bit that I'm always curious about. You rented the kitchen, hired a couple of chefs. How'd you make a few quid though? How'd you like get your first like 10 customers?
So literally my salary went towards that for a long time.
Literally, you're covering doing all of it. Like,
yeah, I was just covering the cost of it. That not all of it. Obviously, I had to eat myself, but most of it. All the salaries I had to pay for them, the rental of the kitchen, all the packaging, all that kind of stuff. I paid for every bit of it for at least 6 months, if not more. And it was just to try and build up some money in that account. So because we were on our journey now of bootstrapping, where it was like, money's in the account, let's buy this. Money's in the account, let's buy this. We need this equipment, we need this, we need this. So we started going on that journey. And when I showed it to friends and things like that, they were like, I'd probably pay this for it. And I'm like, that's way below what is in the market at the moment in terms of price point, but it's actually really good price point for me. We can make a decent margin off that. So I was like, we can go in here at a really mid-level price point, actually offer a better quality product and make some money.
So the solution's already in the market, but you tried them and they weren't any good.
Also, one of the biggest things which I found was mad was that all the meal prep companies out there were charging you money before you got to pick your meals, which I found bizarre.
How do you mean?
So you go, I want a meal prep. I want 2 meals a day for the next month. Bang, buy. Then you get sent the menu. Hey, Gary, please pick this, this, and this. I'm like, it's like going into a supermarket going, here, there's €100. I go and see now what I can get.
That's,
you know,
bizarre.
I
mean, that's bizarre. Sure, the first thing you do at any restaurant is look at the menu.
Exactly.
Good. I'll go inside.
You don't walk into the restaurant and go, here's the money. You know, yeah. Tell me what you got.
What do you serve here?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Pizza? Granny's? What is it?
So, you know, simple thing. So that was probably our big USP when we started. We're like, you can actually choose your meals before you start. And we found then by looking at the website is that the longer people went on choosing your meals, they were in it. You know, they were like,
sunk cost fallacy.
Exactly. They were like, I've gone through this. I have taken the time to select all this. I'm going to purchase this. So a lot of people were afraid that like people wouldn't take the time to go through it and, you know, it'll be boring and whatever. So on our current customer journey, you can skip it if you want, or you can pick the most popular meals, or you can go through it yourself bit by bit.
Yeah, yeah.
80 to 90% of people go through it bit by bit.
Interesting. I would have thought so, because like you're picking your meals.
Absolutely.
Like,
you know, it's, absolutely.
And like you're saving yourself an absolute truckload of time.
Truckload.
So spend 5 minutes and get all the meals you exactly want.
Absolutely, it makes perfect sense. So even now today, some of the big meal prep companies still don't let you pick before you choose, which is,
I find that bizarre.
Don't get it.
But I like this because you don't have to keep reinventing the wheel. You can just be a wee bit better.
Just a small bit. If you have a product that's a small bit better and you come in at a price point that's there, you know, because when we started off, we were taking on some big players. And to be honest, I never really thought we'd get to that. You know, you start off, you're like, listen, we could get 50 customers here, you know?
Is that how you thought?
Yeah, definitely. I'm like absolutely when I thought. Probably my biggest regret is not thinking bigger at the time, you know?
But it's hard though.
It is.
You don't know what you don't know.
No, you don't know what you don't know. And we went in our first week with 9 customers. I'm like, wow. But of course I knew them all. They're all my friends, you know?
Still.
It's great.
9 in the first week.
Yeah, yeah. But it's not too bad, you know? The next week we've 20, and then suddenly, you know, you start people going on plan who you don't know, and you're like, wow. That person is
the first time you see the name. You're like, oh, yeah, yeah, person.
I don't know that guy. He's giving me money. It's amazing.
How did you find them?
How did I find the customers?
How did you find the new customers that weren't in your network?
First of all, we didn't have any marketing spend. We have an Instagram channel. That's it. We are not using Google Ads at all. We don't start using Google Ads for about 2 years. Crazy again, but we didn't have the capacity. Word of mouth. Literally, Gary goes into his office. Gary goes into his staff room. They see the bag, you know, you've seen our bags and have, you know, really good branding on it, and word of mouth. And still today, even though we spend a huge amount of money in marketing now, obviously the company has got massively bigger. 50% of our customers still come through word of mouth, through a friend saying, you must try this, I'm on this. Or they're sitting down desks in offices, in staff rooms, meeting in parks, things like that, and go, I'm on Fit Meals. It's unbelievable. I pay this amount a month. I don't have to think about shopping. I don't have to think about cooking, groceries. I don't have to think about food waste. We've all been there at the end of the week going, oh, didn't cut.
We had all the best of intentions, yeah, right? You didn't map it out. I do this all the time. I map out my meals for the week. And like, there's always a day you don't get back home in time, or you just don't want to. And you end up throwing out like 20, 30 quid worth of stuff.
Absolutely. And especially in Dubai, because a bad meal is only a click away. It's 15 minutes away, you know? So when you get home and it's so, like, there's a misconception too, I think, sometimes why people work really hard here.
Mm.
You know, during the week, you are flat to the mat. Absolutely. The weekends, there's a good lifestyle and things like that. But Monday to Friday, you know, it's could be 12 hours a day. Absolutely gung-ho. Right. You know,
there seems to be a big intensity here.
Huge intensity. Yeah, you do everything big. You know, you work hard, you play hard. Not our ages anymore. Don't play as hard as what we used to.
No,
our kids play hard.
They play hard.
But, you know, there is time. A lot of people are time poor. Really time poor.
Okay.
So you come home after a day out. Like you last night, the cream. And you're just like
eating all the meals.
You know what? Yeah.
Raging. But yeah, I was going home. I was like, look, at least there's fit meals there. Disclaimer, you sent me a load of meals. They're savage. I was going home and you'd said, oh, I tried the spice bag. I was like, right. I had a full day of meetings, got home, looked in the fridge. Every single meal was gone. I was like,
she had the spice bag on you?
She did. I asked her, I was like, was there a spice bag in that order? She goes, there was. It was delicious. And I gave some to Aoife and I was like, great. It's okay. Brilliant.
Yeah. Signature dish that, you know.
But it's clever. Your thing arrives at the door. So we arrived and you'd kindly already pre-sent them to me. So I arrived at the door and like the fit meals bag is there. And you're like, oh, class, you bring it in. So the word of mouth thing I want to explore, because for founders listening, I think it's not talked about, because it's hard to quantify.
Mm.
Because you can do Google ads, right? And go, oh, we got 10 clicks and we spent $10. Cool. A dollar a click. Brilliant. Whereas with word of mouth, it's one of those kind of intangibles. You're like, it's so powerful, but it's very hard to do. How did you factor that in, or how did you engineer it to spread quicker?
What we did at the start is we got involved with a lot of clubs. Dubai is a very social city, hugely social. A lot of people are parts of clubs, affiliates, whether it's GA clubs or rugby clubs or running clubs or things like that. So we would have got in there, boots on the ground, and said, here, guys, here's a free week's plan for one of your members, raffle it off, and you might hand out these snacks, things like that.
Gotcha.
Leaflets, flyers with 20% off.
Very cost effective. Hard work, but very cost effective.
Hard work, absolutely, but very cost effective. Cost you very little. All of a sudden you have access to 100 people, and then if you do that 10 times, it's 1,000 people and so on and so forth. You know, you have a capitalization rate of 5% in that. That's 50 customers, you know, with 2 days work.
It's overlooked a lot because it's not digital first, and it's not like very easy. If that, you go out and graph. Whereas I think like so many founders should be doing it. They should be doing the graph, boots on the ground, having the stall at the market, having this, having that. It still works. I believe this to my core. It still bloody works.
It should be your first port of call. Absolutely. Especially when you see companies and, you know, they start off with a lot of seed funding, something like that. They're going hard on like marketing agencies, Google ads. And I'm like, get in your car, get your product and go door to door. Literally go out and get word of mouth. And then, you know, that literally grew, and we'd ask people like, oh, how'd you hear about us? Oh, my friend is on it and his friend is on it. I'm literally the last person to go on your meal plan in our staff room, something like that. And, you know, we'd be added to some WhatsApp groups and staff rooms, and people would be chatting about the meals and stuff like that. So it was really cool. We got a really, really good uptake, especially with the Irish community starting off. You know, a lot of them really supported us, and we were heavily involved with a lot.
Did it help being Irish?
Absolutely huge. Yeah, definitely. Especially starting off, you know, they really, really got behind us, and still do. Still one of our biggest customers, Irish people on Fitmeals. Absolutely.
How did you come out here? Like, how long are you in Dubai?
Came out in 2012. Came out for 2 years. Yeah, came out for 2 years. The usual, and I was actually teaching for a couple of years. I'm not even a qualified teacher, just came out the English language thing just to take. 2012 was a kind of a tough time in Ireland.
For sure.
Wasn't much going on, and this looked quite enticing. So I came out here, had a great time, unbelievable. And then, yeah, took it on from there, took the GM job in that sports club. Was there 6 years. I literally double job there for 18 to 24 months doing fit meals. And that job, which is tough.
Did you always want to do your own thing?
Yeah. I couldn't tell you exactly what I wanted to do, but definitely always had that mindset that, you know, I think I'd really like to work for myself, really like to try something out. And that is key to trying it out, because, you know, if it didn't work, it wasn't the end of the world. I hadn't put the house in, you know. Yeah, a lot of time, a lot of double jobbing, that kind of thing. But, you know, it wasn't going to send me under. So it's really important to test that out.
And there's another important lesson. Like, I mean, entrepreneurs have this misshapen reputation as being crazy risk takers, which on the whole, we do take a lot of risk. But it's always like you said there, it's generally calculated, because you're not stupid. You know, you kind of have to, like,
yeah.
And as you get older as well, you have to be a little bit cuter with your risk. But like the most entrepreneurs, this is why I call this the entrepreneur experiment, because I believe experiments are what you build on. You're a perfect example of this. You experiment your way to a massive business.
Absolutely. And you're right. I don't know any entrepreneurs, and definitely not my circle, who are huge risk takers. They're not. I think people who are not entrepreneurs presume entrepreneurs are risk takers.
Well, I think in context, it looks risky, because it is, but you leverage the downside. You look at the house and go, worst case scenario, let's say we get no customers. The food's absolute rubbish. All right, a couple of months in, $5,000 lesson, off we go.
Look at what you learned. Look at what you learned through that. It'd be unbelievable, you know?
If you take it as a lesson, I always think of it as people should rebuild it as like an MBA or a master's.
That's
or
really,
like, yeah. I'm big on apprenticeships. I think apprenticeships should come back for like so many industries, because I'd love to have done an apprenticeship with a founder going, right, I'm going to apprentice under you for 3 years. You're going to teach me everything there is to know about whatever, media or whatever, like sport.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you go to college and you do 4 years and you pick college when you're like 17. I didn't have a clue what I wanted to do. I worked in a shop. I had like little nixers on the side. And I was like, oh, I'll do business because I like working. Like working in the shop, I like doing these things.
Absolutely, but like, yeah.
It's so hard when you're 17. But I know so many people that most people I know do nothing related to their degree.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're really right. Apprenticeship. I think I said it to you. I listened to your podcast with Jack Pierce, and he got to spend so much time with Liam O'Casey.
Yeah, Liam Casey. Yeah,
or Liam Casey. And I was like, oh.
Perfect example.
I was so jealous. I was like, oh my God. To get
I was 18 again. I just go to wherever it is.
Exactly. To get work. 2 years, like with that. Wow, like amazing. But yeah, absolutely so right. My mother had her own business. She had a hair salon. So I kind of seen the business mindset there, let's say. And cousins and uncles, things like that, had their own businesses. And you can see what works and what doesn't
work. There's a work ethic thing there, I think, as well.
Oh, absolutely.
A couple of things I always say, see it to be it. You have to understand, okay, that's what an entrepreneur is. That's what a business owner is. Cool. But you also got to see the work ethic. Like your mom hair salon, not an easy business.
No. Work.
You are not, you're there every day. You're not there. It's not happening.
So hard, like work so hard. And I think especially our parents' generation as well, a lot of them had to work so hard. Not that you don't work hard, and it is, everyone knows entrepreneurs work hard, but I don't think they realize how hard it is. Like the amount you sacrifice in the first couple of years is huge.
Absolutely. All the time, huge. I think, because it goes through the life cycles.
Crazy. I always meet people and they're like, yeah, I'm going to start it. I'm just going to hire this person. They're going to do that for me. And I'm like, best of luck. I'm like,
it's good intention. Like hiring does help you grow, but in the early stages, like no one knows the business. Like
no one knows it.
But you can't, like you have to know. Like I used to have a property management company and I would like change the beds.
Yeah.
Do every check-in. I would do, because then I knew every single nut, bolt, screw. I knew how long a turnover took. I knew how long many bed sheets you needed. I knew you needed a spare. I knew you needed this. I knew the times. I knew everything to the minute.
Yeah.
So then when I did hire people, I was like, this is what good looks like. Because if you don't know what good looks like and you hire someone, it's a costly, costly lesson, because they don't know what good looks like. So it's this trickle-down effect of like, how can you hire someone and not tell them? It's not fair to them or you.
No. Like, you know, Levi, our COO, she came with us on day one to work with us on day one. We used to start work. We used to come in and portion at 4:30 in the morning, start our real job at 8 a.m. in the morning.
Ooh.
Do you know? Was that kind of like, and then you've been in the nuts and bolts, you know what it takes. And the biggest lesson from that too is not just knowing the details of it, but then knowing when to step away and go, okay, I need to now get someone else in here who knows more than this about me. I can give them, and it's important to give them a platform to go off and not a ceiling, you know, and say, Gary,
it's a good distinction. I like that.
This is what I know. This is what worked. I'm telling you, this is exactly how to do it. Follow that for 2 to 3 months because you will get such an idea of what it is and then rip it up. Go in and do your own thing with it because you have more experience in this industry than I do. I have more experience in this type of job, but it's up to you now to take it. It's so easy as a founder to go in and go, Gary, this is what you need to do. This works. I'm telling you, you decide you're something different. Go, no. This is how it works. It's so tempting to do that.
Micromanagement. I love that. I'm going to say again, so I remember to pull it out later. Give people a platform and not a ceiling.
It is class. It's huge. And it's something that we've all had to work so hard in fitness because it's, you know, especially the people who've been there since day one, it's your baby. And you're like, you know, I've got this to a huge amount and I'm just handing it off. Parts of the business, not all of the business, but you know, like your food safety, your quality. All
I have to say, your tour inspired me and terrified me.
Yeah.
I was like, that I could never do. Because I've come out of a business with the property where I was like, oh, I never want to go back to dealing with that many moving parts again. Then I saw your business, was like, oh, I thought I had a lot of moving parts. Owen's got a lot of moving parts. Like, there's so many bits to your business, but you are all over it. How did you go from having no experience to building these systems? Like, how did you learn this? Because what you showed me the other day was genuinely world class. I'm not blowing smoke because you're sitting in front of me, but like, it was world class. Like, you have everything to a T.
Anything I've learned from business systems, I've learned from someone else or from books. Or that, and just application of it. So I would say, you know, FitMean's journey, we moved to the current facility in July 2021 and just literally exponential growth again and again and again. And then we started to kind of flatline. And it was like, okay, what's going on here? Why is this happening? And I'm an avid reader and I picked up a book called Scaling Up by Vern Harnish. And you know when you flick through a book and you're just like, oh my God, that's me. You know, that's the best feeling in the world.
That's me again.
And like, I'm like, yeah. So I was like, so all of a sudden.
It's rare.
Yeah.
Because a lot of business advice, very generic, very fluffy.
Exactly. So the one thing I liked about this was that it had really strong action points on it. So it's about four big things. It's about your people, growing your people, growing your strategic direction, like properly writing out your strategy, your execution, which is huge. A lot of business books give you this, but they don't give you any execution tips.
Yeah.
About your execution of it, and then the cash, really managing your cash in a positive way, let's say. So I found probably going from staff of 60 to 70 up to now, we're now up to 125, 130, and we've about 10 or 15 open positions. So, you know, we're nearly double of that 70 point. But I found going from 70 upwards as hard as starting the business. Because really, all of a sudden, this is a total different company than the one you started. Completely different. It's not just everyone in a room together going, oh, hey, let's do this, let's do that. Gary,
70 is much higher than I thought.
Yeah.
Because usually people, someone explained it to me and how I used to frame references, someone explained it to me as the two room problem. I can't remember who it was, but I've stolen it so many times, is like, oh, it was grand we worked in the same room. You know, it was, we're all on this table here and, you know, I could hear what Owen's chatting
yeah,
about.
Yeah, yeah,
Owen's
yeah.
Here, what Gary's chatting about. We all knew where we were. He's like, it was the funniest thing. We got like another office just down the hall and the culture fell apart in the business.
Absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
That's why. I was like, why? He's like, because that flow of information suddenly bottlenecked. And then we had to bring all these processes in.
Mm.
To go make sure Owen knows what Gary's talking about down the hall.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he goes, it killed the business.
Yeah. So, and definitely our culture suffered because all of a sudden we had to isolate departments. Do you know, we had to put like kitchen and food safe nutrition on its own because it was such a big department now. And then we had to put our logistics on its own. So like, that's not a huge part of our company. When we started off, we used a third party logistics company, and especially in, you know, everything has to be chilled. You know, you got the meals to your door, they have to be super safe, super chilled. When you hand your product off to another person, you're putting your life in their hands.
Right.
And like, people were getting meals, they were upside down. There was no meals in the bag. The bag wasn't there on time. It came the wrong day. Like, nightmare. And you are making such a good product, putting your life and soul into this product. And it's like, if it doesn't get to the person, it doesn't matter what the product is. It could be anything. So,
especially when it's literally probably their breakfast for that day or...
that's it.
A hangry person is not a happy person.
You've paid good money for this and you're like, yes, my breakfast has come today. My Oreo oats is here, and you walk outside and you're like, you know, that's tough. So a big decision we made too was that we started bringing all the logistics in-house, which was a huge, huge move for us. And again, bootstrapping, we make money, we buy a van. All of a sudden, 20% of our deliveries are in-house. Next month, we make money, we buy a van.
Ah, okay. I was wondering how you did that, actually, because you explained it to me the other day, and I was like, but how did they go from like zero vans to like loads of vans?
Yeah.
It's like, stuff's expensive.
Hugely. And, you know, nearly half the cost of the van is like spent again fitting out the van, because you have to get it certified, you have to get it wrapped, you have to get it insulated, you have to get the chiller put in, you have to get all thermostats put in, you have to have it certified by Dubai Municipality for food watch, for food safety. It is, you know, to get a van on the road takes 4 weeks from the moment you get the van, because it just has to go away and get all these processes in.
Jeez, you really picked a meaty problem, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. But going back to that, so like we 25 vans on the road now. So like that's nearly a logistics company with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, all of a sudden there's 40 people working in that department. They have to be on their own, and you lose sight of each other. You know, you really do. And you have to change really everything about how the company works, about how you communicate, about the strategy. So in that book, it gives you like, right, your meeting cases. This is how you should meet. Senior leadership need to meet for huddle every morning. Big points, just very quick, gone. Then you have your huddles with your team. And basically everyone in Fit Meals will have a daily huddle that lasts no more than 10 minutes.
Okay.
And it's succinct, to the point. What's going on today? What went on yesterday? What am I getting done today? And it's a really good accountability tool for yourself as well. So I'll have it with my senior leadership team to go, today I'm signing off on this HR policy that we have brought in, or process or something.
Okay.
And I was like, that has to get done today. Whatever happens, it just has to get done today. And then it gives you a good meeting cadence on your, you know, your monthly meetings, your strategy quarterly meetings, and all that. So it gives you a real good
frame. You're trying to answer my next question, but how do you do this without losing the speed and the culture of the company you've built? Because what you're talking about there is, and what a lot of entrepreneurs have said to me is like, going to a big business, just, it killed the fun.
Yeah.
Killed
the, absolutely,
the joy. It killed the what we enjoyed about the business. And it kind of leaves them soulless. Whereas like you're buzzing, you're full of energy. How have you done it? Like, how have you made that transition?
Well, we didn't do it perfectly. That's for sure. And we got a lot of that. Oh, it's not the company it once was. And
yeah.
Do you know what? I mean, if people said to me, I was like, you're absolutely right. It's not the company it once was. It definitely isn't. It's 5 times bigger. And now, you know, we either grow or we die. And I always say that to our staff. If we stay like this, and some people would want, look, we've great numbers. It's great fun. We're having a laugh. And like, we stay going like this, we're going to start going down like this. We're not going to be innovative. We're not going to be catching up with the market. We're not going to be pushing the boundaries. It was like, it's only a matter of time.
So I'm sitting in front of you today. That is why I'm sitting in front of you today. I was like, 2025 is the year I blow the doors off it. I go as hard and as quick,
yep,
and as far as I can. Because it's exactly that. I was having a moment where I was like, oh, you're doing great. You're doing, oh, it's great. Yeah, Pod's great. I'm like, it's a minnow. Like, there's Pods doing a million a day.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there is no ceiling to this. It's like, and I had to readjust my ambition. I had to reframe my ambition because I if I'm honest, I was fearful. I was kind of held back a lot. I was kind of, oh yeah, but like they're this and they're that. And it was actually just a slight change in the wording. I was like, it's a media company. And when I did that in my head, I suddenly went, okay, Gary.
Possibilities are huge.
Big boy business here.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's think big boy things.
Think big, yeah.
That's led me here to be here today.
And you have to. And you said something like, how do you bring that in without losing speed? For me, you can't. We had to lose speed and try and literally, and I'll say this after, we're going to take one step backwards here and 10 step forwards.
So you were conscious of that?
Yeah. And we were like, listen, we're going to have to focus on ourselves here before we start focus on the business. You know, like even things like really living our core values, bringing that across the whole company. When you're in the room together, it's very easy to know people's core values. You know, you don't have to talk to them. You don't have to advertise them anywhere. You know, it's simple. I know Gary. I know what he stands for. I know what he's like. I know what his morals are, his values, what he stands for, his philosophy. But all of a sudden people are joining you and they don't see you. You know, there's 100 staff all of a sudden. So like they have to know what the company's purpose is, what the mission is. It really goes on to that. how we communicate with each other. I mean, our communication is so, so important. It's one thing to tell someone something, but another thing to tell someone why you're doing something. It's very easy for them to understand it if they know why you're doing it. I definitely was guilty of that, you know, especially we're doing that change. Like, we're doing this. This is what we're doing. Monday morning, we're done a huddle. And everyone's like, what are you doing? You know, like, what are you doing that for? Never told the boy. You know, so I
big nuance there. That's interesting.
Huge.
You've explained it really well there, like the what and the why.
Yeah.
Doing this, why?
So I definitely jumped into it a bit quicker than what we should have had. I should have done it probably a little more incrementally, but I mean, that's entrepreneur, isn't it? You just go, this is what we're doing. Let's go. It took a huge, huge amount of time to get that across. If I was back again, I'd definitely do it a bit better. I got a scaling up coach, Brian Keegan, in Dublin. Huge advice. I'd advise any business person to get a mentor.
A scaling up coach.
Yeah.
Interesting. It's the first time I heard someone phrase it like that.
Yeah. So he definitely taught me about the why. He was like, you have to make yourself understand why you're doing this and what's the main purpose behind this. Because right now you're going in and just going, Gary, next week you're doing 5 pods a week. You're like, what are you on about, Owen? I can't do 5 pods a week. Well, that's what we're doing. That's how we're going. I'll see you Monday. You know, not probably wasn't that abrasive, but we really had to get the why in. And another thing was, you know, we really had to set down our KPIs and stuff within our departments and try and get people to understand that these are to challenge us and to give us a standard, a benchmark. Definitely one of the biggest things I learned was that you should let people set their own targets. I was going in, especially in departments where I hadn't worked in a long time before. Let's take portioning, for example, and going in and saying, hey, let's have these are KPIs. These are the targets. Good luck. You know, all the people are like, well, what's this about? We've never done this before. You know, we get our meals out in time. They're always perfect. Well,
right.
What are you doing?
Okay, so you were trying to introduce like things you could measure and manage.
There you go.
Okay.
If you don't measure it, you're not managing it, you know? It's easy to not measure something when it's small and you can see it. You can see the quality. You can see the time.
It either is or it isn't. Yeah, you know, like it's working or it's not working. So how, because you said something there, I want to explore a little bit. Let people set their own targets. How did you do that? Because the temptation is to do exactly what you said. Yeah. I think most entrepreneurs listening is like, yeah, that's me. I just tell people what to do and they go do it. How did you make sure people set the right targets that didn't softball and go, I could do probably 2 pods a week.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Two sounds about right. How did you make sure they weren't lowballing you?
That was a long process and definitely first thing, you have to have the right people there, don't you? You know, you absolutely have to have the right people in those positions. I'll probably come back to that later in the pod. But if you actually challenge people in a right kind of setting, go, Gary, love what you're doing. 3 pods a week, brilliant, really, really good. But I've seen a lot of people do a lot more pods, and there's a lot of really great content out there. What do you think you could really challenge yourself with? You know, what do you think your team could really, really challenge? So let's say we use the portioning guys. So you know they're doing 45 seconds a meal. That's their timer. That's what they're doing. And then you have to be really careful with that because you don't want to go too fast. Quality will slip. You don't want to go too slow. We're never going to get the meals out the door. So you go, listen, what do you think you can do? And really frame it from that end. And honestly, probably 8 out of 10 targets that were handed up to me were actually too aggressive. I was like, okay, love the enthusiasm. Really love it. Because people hate getting stuff handed down to them.
I wouldn't have thought that 8 out of 10 were too aggressive.
Yeah.
I thought people would have went, yeah.
No, literally, like you got to listen, I love the enthusiasm. 42 seconds a meal is probably a bit too much of a push. Let's try it 44. Let's see. Let's aim for 42 in the back of our minds. Let's go for 44 and see how we go, you know? So then you're meeting them halfway. You're not pushing them that hard.
Yeah.
And a big thing is too that you have to empower your staff to feed these things up to you rather than you throwing it down. You know, no one wants anything thrown down. So that was huge. Another big thing we did, probably the biggest turning point in getting people bought into that scaling of methodology, going like, this is why we're doing our meetings, this is why we're setting our KPIs, this is why we're having our quarterly priorities, you know, this is why we have a strategic document, this is why we have core values. We opened up the books to everyone, the P&L, every staff member.
Fully transparent.
Fully transparent. Oof. Big move.
That's scary.
Terrifying.
What stage did you do that at?
When you're having conversations with staff and the answer is so clear in my mind because the reason is so clear in my mind because I know the P&L, but I can't tell them. I'm like, the cost of sales, I can tell them the cost of sales is up, and I'm like, but if we do this and this, we're literally going to have this impact on the P&L. Or like I'm saying to logistics, can you aim for, you know, can you aim for 80,000 a month? You don't understand how much of a big, big impact that has. What impact? They don't know the bottom line. They haven't a clue. So I'm having all these conversations with people and read a book called The Great Game of Business by Jack Stack. And again, it was one of those moments where I read, I'm like, that's me. That's me. And it really resonated because they're a manufacturing company. We're more or less a manufacturing company.
Yeah, okay.
You know, we have a lot of moving parts, as you said. And you said there's a lot of stuff going on. I somehow have to instill a huge sense of collective responsibility within this company because we're food. One small mistake from someone who's not paying attention can have absolutely huge, huge ramifications for us. There is no there is no fine line with food. It's done or it's not done. It's good or it's not good. It's, you know, it's here you go. So we have to make sure that everyone is on the same page. And I remember chatting to Brian and like, I was like still debating this. Oh, geez, I don't know what to do here. You know, like some months, you know, it looks like we should probably go into Barbados for the weekend. Other months, it's like, Jesus, bro, are we going to be able to pay salaries next month? You know, you've ups and downs in all walks of life. Now, thankfully, our cash flow is good and we're making steady profits and things like that. But you have to have staff to be aware to know that we need that. We're a bootstrap company. That money is literally going buying the next piece of equipment that you want to get or hiring the next staff.
How far into the business were you at this stage?
We only did it about last year.
2020.
Yeah. So 4 years in. So one of the big things you have to do before it is have a really clear salary structure. So we created a pathway to leadership document that shows everyone, you know, the progression within the company, how to get there, what the salary is for that role.
Okay.
And, you know, because the last thing you want is a, hey, we made tons of money this month. I'm walking into Owen and going, I want a raise, you know, that's just going to be a nightmare.
Yeah. So, that was going to be one of my next questions. Yeah. It's like, the people seeing you're turning over loads of cash, they're like, geez, someone's doing right well. I'm here on 30 grand a year.
No, but why not 35? Won't even make a dent, you know?
Yeah.
So that was really...
You retrofitted that in first.
Instilling that. And then the second part, one of the biggest fears is people think, God, the company's making a lot of money. People are going to see us and they're just going to down tools and say, everyone pay me. And the industry average when you do this and ask people what you think the net profit is, it comes in at around 55%.
They think the profit of the company
is about 55%, which sounds mad, but you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And if you're not a business person, you haven't seen a P&L before, you know, you just come in doing a job. How do you know all the hidden costs? Yeah. You see the big costs, maybe you see salaries, you see costs of sales. You know, do you see staff visas, for example, which is a huge thing over here? Do you see, you know, pensions? Do you see that? Do you see the government costs, the legal costs, the audit costs? All those little things just add up to huge amounts. So I did it with like the top like 15, 16 people in the company. I was like, I'm just going to do an anonymous survey with you guys. What do you think the net profit of the company is after we paid everything out? It came out at 39%.
Okay.
39%. I was like, I've nothing to lose here. They already think we're making 30, which we're not. You know, right. I'm not making 30. I was like, I've actually nothing to lose.
That was a great way of doing it though, because you experimented, you kind of tested it to see what is the internal perception. Any business owner will be kind of going, oh yeah, I know exactly where Owen's going with this. I had Colin Harmon on, who owns 3FE Coffee. So he's kind of like 9 coffee and restaurants in Dublin. And social clips did really well. So went a bit viral. And like, €5 for a coffee? What a ripoff. The margin on coffee is 90%. And you're like, well, you're a moron.
Yeah.
No, you're on TikTok and you're putting comments in.
How many business do you own?
But like, you're like 90%. There's no business in the world. Oh. It's doing 90%. Like, come on. Like, but it's all those things that like people don't think, like, we're sitting in a studio here today. Not free.
Who paid for the chair? Who paid for the, you know?
You know, you're kind of going, Eddie, I didn't fly me out here business class for free. You know, you're paying for all this stuff. I flew economy, just in case any people think.
I was about to say, you might want to edit that one out.
In case probably people think pods make a lot of money, I flew economy. But it's those kind of things. Like, yeah, you know, it costs money to be sitting in front of you in Dubai. It costs money to put the highest quality food, highest quality ingredients, the best chefs, the best logistics, get them there on time. Poof. But it's interesting because I think this will blow a lot of people's minds. So I'm kind of digging into it to kind of understand how you did this process, because it's kind of counterintuitive to how most people think. Well, the whole are really tight, really secretive. They like to keep the finances like tight because they're afraid of like perception.
I'd have been the exact same. If you said to me 2 years ago, I'd have said, you're off your head. It's like, I'm never doing that. It'll cause an absolute nightmare. And especially in Ireland, you know, if you do not know what anything is, I have actually a good friend. He's a qualified accountant, and then later did his law exams, and now he's a solicitor. He's quite high up in a firm.
Man loves studying.
And he loves it. And we were chatting, and he was talking about he was off at a conference event. He was like, I hope it was good for the company now. I hope, you know, it was a worthwhile thing that cost a lot of money. I was like, how would that be in your, you know, in your kind of R&D kind of, you know, and expense? And he's like, what do you mean? I was like, how did line up towards the revenue or the profits? I goes, oh, I haven't a clue. And I'm like, of course you don't. I was like, no one, like, why would you not have this guy? He's a qualified accountant. Why would you not have him look at the books and get everything together? But I pulled one of our staff aside and was like, can you please explain this to me, as in how you talk? Because one of them taught like 50%. And I was like, can you write this down for me? And once she wrote down, it made sense. But like, she completely forgot about software costs. I mean, software costs are huge. All the money we have to pay the banks, the finance costs, all those type of things. I was like, I can see how you taught that. I completely see how you taught that.
Okay.
So the next thing we had to do was do financial education. And later we explained to people what a P&L is, all the lines on the P&L, what they stand for, what the costs are, and start doing like fake P&Ls, like sample P&Ls, and get people thinking like that. And then we released our first P&L. Thankfully, it was in a month that was kind of so-so, you know, so we'd give them an idea.
Yeah.
And it was literally night and day.
Did people get it?
Most, not everyone. You'll get people off. Some people have more intuition with numbers than others do. But just the why we were doing everything changed night and day. They're like, I understand now why you're doing this. I understand now why you're putting these KPIs in. I understand now why you're doing X, Y, and Z. So like the why of our whole change there, of becoming a proper company and not staying in our cottage industry, one room and everyone having a laugh, completely changed the mindset. Just
how long did it take to get this whole process through? Because this is fascinating. Like, I think a lot of people might even reach out to you after this, because it's very, you're the first person I've had on. I think you're the first person in like 405, 6, 7, 8 episodes that has done this open book, full transparency with the whole staff. People have done it with C-suite and stuff. But it's with the whole staff. Like, I walked into your office the other day and it's on the wall.
Yeah, all the numbers.
It's a canteen.
Yeah, yeah.
It's glass.
The only thing I'm afraid of is a competitor will walk in someday and go, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, fair. But
well, you know what I mean.
They probably have a good idea anyway.
Do you know what? And like, I'm not naive. I know that, and it's very clear also there is a red line there, but like, it's staff. Like, I'm trusting you with this. If you go off and give this to someone else, it literally is gross misconduct. Goodbye.
Yeah.
I'm trusting you with this. It's going to happen. This is life. It's people. But
we live in a world as well of social media and kind of like, you know, everything's transparent, more or less. And I think, you know, people still send me, like, weirdly, they send me press releases and they're like, this is embargoed for like 3 days. A, I'm a podcast. I'm not breaking news here.
So yeah, yeah.
Why you send me your press releases? Please stop. And B, I'm like, those days are over.
Yeah.
Like, stuff's leaking out, like left, right, and center. Like, you have these things called phones and people are WhatsApping each other all the time. You'll never guess what happened, blah, blah, blah. And you like, either control the message and you control the medium.
Yeah. So some people are like, your competitors are going to get it. I was like, I don't care. I couldn't care less.
I was like, I can probably write the P&L for my competitors anyhow.
I'm just going to say, they know.
They know.
Pricing, then go to your website, they can see your pricing, then go, you know, I reckon he's about 1,000 customers. Yeah. We're back in the maths. Okay, grant.
There you go. If you have the knowledge and you have the insight, you're going to be able to do it anyhow. So I was like, I've nothing to lose here. They can't copy our culture. They can't copy our service, our quality, you know. They can't take that from our P&L. So off you go.
Yeah.
So it took about 6 to 12 months to get it really, really going. So what we do now is every Tuesday morning at 8:30. I'll backstep. So obviously to get people into it also, we get a card. We're like, every month, 10% of the profits after tax will be split between everyone, no matter your title, whatever, once you're in, equally. So we've about 120 staff now. It'll be growing to 130, 140 soon. And the only thing is, you have to be working with us 3 months because you have to provide value towards this. And it's just split between everyone. And sorry, it's multiplied by the KGI success rate.
What does that mean?
So that
you just call it the same. 10% of your profits after tax every month goes to staff.
Yeah.
That's a big decision. Where'd that come from?
Honestly, I wanted a sense of collective responsibility. It was just something I had myself. We had a bonus system before where we said, listen, 10% of the profits we're going to give back to staff. But it was a bit cloaks and daggers. You know, people didn't know what the profit was. So I was based on off revenue. I was kind of like, you have to trust me here. Do you know? And it's just...
I know what you mean.
And I remember actually one time a staff member came in and they were like, oh, and we had no bonus last month. And I was like, we didn't make any money last month. I'm like, and I was like, well, why you had to? And then I was thinking, they don't know that. I was like, and then it actually light bulbed my head. I was like, this bonus system does not work. They haven't a clue what's happening. And it's not so much of a bonus system as a recognition system and a learning system for people to say, geez, that month was really good. Why was it good? What did we do there?
Again.
How can we do it again? So the KPI success rate will either, it'll ratchet you up or ratchet you down. If you are on point with your KPIs and you're hitting them, remember, you set your own targets. Yeah, you're the person who goes in, and that's where we get the balance of people setting good targets.
Right. Okay. This is all starting to come together now in my head. So you've got the KPIs, which you said earlier. You've come into me and go, Gary, you're going to do 5 pods a week. I've said, well, we can do 10. You're like, I'll do like 7.
Mm.
Okay. I've set the target. So I hit the target. I do 7 great pods for you. Deliver. You're like, yep, bang on. You're in 10% of the profits this month.
There you go.
That's how it works.
However, Gary, if you put out 7 crap podcasts, that's not going to work. So you need to tell me what is the balance there.
Okay.
Yeah. He goes, do you know what? I can do 5 really good ones. Let's do 5 really good ones, Gary.
Okay.
Let's get them out the door. So like when we look at our portion, guys, let's go back to them. It's a very easy example. We go like, we want to go fast. We don't want to go too fast. We need to hit that line. And then all of a sudden, you know, guys are always forever coming. We need more staff. We need more staff. So we're saying, you know, if you can get that down by a second, we can actually increase our meals and not hire another staff member. So all of you guys thinking are like, especially in busy periods, I'm trying to get this across to guys. We're like, yeah, I understand we're under pressure now, but we're coming up to a low period. Do we need this staff member?
I get you.
And they're thinking like that now. So you're like, you know what? We're going to ride this out. We have a small bit of overtime this month, nothing huge, but we know next month is going to be really flat. So I don't want that staff member. I don't want someone coming in who's going to be twiddling their thumbs next month and taking some of the bonus off us. Yeah.
That's clever.
Yeah. However,
so now they see the real impact of, so essentially you're making like 120 kind of like part owner entrepreneurs here.
Business people.
For people that'll get it, like you're, yeah, maybe half will get it.
And
like,
it's a great,
you're creating a culture of ownership.
There you go. And it's a great line in that book, The Great Game of Business. It's a company of owners will always outthink the owner of a company. It's a brilliant line. I love it. I'm always saying this, but you have to think like an owner here, because you are in this. We're all in this now. So then let's say, go back to the portions again. They come back and they say, do you know what? I really think there's going to be a lot of overtime next month. If we do this, if we actually hire someone, it will actually be cheaper for us. We will have them with us. We're expecting this growth, you know, because they can see our growth. They can see our strategy. I really think we should go and get this person. It's going to add value. It's actually going to put more money in our pockets rather than taking money out of it. So you're really thinking about that. Last week, I was walking through the kitchen, and one of our kitchen stewards, he's only working with us 4 or 5 months. He actually grabs me. He's like, hey, revenue's down this week. What's going on?
I love it.
Brilliant. I was thinking, I was like,
but I love how he's empowered enough to grab you.
Yeah.
The owner, I'm going to grab Owen. Like, yeah. That shows a lot of...
like communication, but also like accessibility.
Brilliant. And this guy is, this guy's English is only so-so. I'll come to that in communication in a second. So I was like, I love you're asking me. I was actually kind of caught. I was like, God, why is Derivian? And then it clicked me. I was like, so we had a really good offer on last week. So a lot of people front-loaded. Also, it's midterm this week, so we don't have many people in. So, you know, so next week now we need to be back on it and get that really working. I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. And I was thinking, I should have put that in my weekly. So I send out a weekly communication thing to all the staff. We do like our critical numbers. We have 5 very critical numbers, like in our total customers, our retention rates, things like that. That goes to all the staff. We have core value champions every week. People went above and beyond. We talk about our North Star, you know, the big thing we're aiming towards. We give a couple of customer reviews. We get so many really good customer reviews. I want the staff to see them.
Okay.
And what I do is we will record that also. We'll do it as a video. And there's a really good AI software called HeyGen. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
No.
So this is really good. It will take my recording, create an avatar of me, very same as I'm sitting here, and do it in different languages.
Oh, wow.
So all of a sudden, I'm speaking Hindi, I'm speaking Nepali, singing Sinhala, Sri Lankan, Arabic, the whole lot, and it's going out to all the staff. So if
that's really
cool. So if your English is not
100%, what's it called?
HeyGen.
G-E-N.
Brilliant
show notes if anyone wants.
Brilliant software. And it, like, your mouth is moving the exact same. So like, so much so that we hired a lady 2 weeks ago. I won't embarrass her, and she was gobsmacked. She was looking. She was like, "How does he know so many languages?" That's so good, because the avatar is very like, you have to stay very, you know, motionless, very, you know, because it has to grab your mouth and make sure it's doing that, so you can't have any big movements in that. So I'm just sitting there like Arabic, Hindi, you know, very confident kind of rant, and she was like. And then, like, she asked one of the other staff, she's like, how long have you owned here? He's here 2012. She's like, makes sense. Yeah
he's picked up a lot fast.
Very lingual.
Yeah. One of the guys, one of the Hindi guys, kind of is like, can you slow down on the Hindi? It's just, it's a bit fast. I'm like, I actually don't control that. That's annoying.
That's cool. Like, man, there's so much of this business. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, but listen, if you teach people the why and you get them involved in that, you know, and like, the bonus isn't about the money. You know, the money is the result of it, don't be wrong, but it's about the collective responsibility there and people feeling like they're involved and that they can make a huge impact. So like, the guy who asked me about the revenue, he cannot control revenue. And I was like, listen, because this week is so low in revenue, this is a, you know, it actually means it's a quite weak. You can look at your processes now. You can see, is there anything we can do to cost save? Is there anything we can do to make sure that, you know, what we're doing is the best way to be doing things? Can we make things faster for you? You know, so think about that this week while you have a bit of time.
He can't go out and get new customers, but equally he can probably save you like maybe 10 cent on every meal.
Imagine 10 cent. Wow.
Okay.
And that's what we say to our staff too, you know, anyone that comes in the door, we need to be really, really particular about them, because they need to either add value or save cost. If they don't do that, they're putting their hand in your pocket and walking out the door with it. So like, the guys are now super focused on this, really good at getting very particular about our hiring, and especially in our industry, you know, especially if you've entry level roles, let's say delivery drivers now, and you're busy and you need a delivery driver. And a guy walks in, you're like, oh, you've 2 hands and 2 feet. Let's go. Come on. You know, you can drive. Easy to do that. We've done it. You just have to get very particular about what staff you bring in and making sure that they're absolutely, you know, the best you can bring in for what you need.
You said something there. I think it's great advice to all aspiring founders if you're trying to start a business. And I say this to a lot of people who are kind of struggling with their idea. I'm like, are you saving your business money or are you making the money?
Yeah.
If you're not doing either of those things, it's a vitamin.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be slow to buy from you. Whereas if you're doing painkillers, you're just saving cost, making money, that's an easy sell. So it's very tangible to own, going, yeah, you're going to save 10% off the bottom line. Just where do I sign up?
Yeah.
Give me the 12-month contract.
Come now.
Or you're adding 12%, 10%. You know, they're the kind of things. And I think what you're doing is you're educating people on what actually moves the needle in a business.
Yeah. And even again, and everything going back to people. I know one guy, he was doing an interview with a guy, he was really impressed with him, and he actually didn't hire him. I was like, why didn't you hire your man? He was like, he goes, I have a feeling he's gonna move away from the UAE in the next year or so. And he was like, we're going to end up paying for his visa for 2 years. It's not a great cost for the company. I was like, thank you. It's like, that makes perfect sense. Mm. If he didn't see the P&L, he wouldn't have a clue about that.
Yeah. Do you know? Another body in the door.
Exactly.
Off we go.
Brilliant.
One less job for me to have to do.
Yeah. Ticks the boxes. But, you know, it's going to cost us actually a lot of money in the long run. We're going to have to get all these papers together, everything. And I just don't think...
Any downsides to this? Because I'm like, what's the catch? Like, what's the, like, you know, people are listening. I think you'll have really enjoyed this episode because I think a lot of people are going to get a lot of value out of this and kind of go, oh, I never thought of it like that. Is there any downsides?
Some people will not buy into it. Just very similar. They'll be like, oh God, this is, I don't get this. Or, you know, not understand the figures of it. And it was a big thing in that book. They're like, some people will self-select out, you know, and like, this just isn't for me. You might end up losing some people, but if you lost them, they're not for you anyway. Another downside, but it's a good thing, is you'll start seeing, and other people will start seeing people that shouldn't be in the company. And they're like, wait a minute, what does Gary do here?
Joke. Good question.
And like, we're like, actually, you know, I don't know. I think he does this, but, and like, people are really starting to question each other, question their value. Not in a mutiny sort of way, but like,
Coup Fridays.
Exactly.
Culture Thursdays and Coup Fridays.
But, you know, we're now very particular about people's roles in the company and going, are you adding value or are you saving cost? And genuinely, like, 99% of people will get on board with this and get into it. Another negative, if you're not paying your people a proper market rate or proper value, they see you're making money, they'll walk out the door. Very simple. So you have to ensure that your salary structure is really, really tight, really good. And it's something you have to work on every year and update with market values and things like that. Do you know, it's something we have to work on all the time, to be honest. Negatives for me at the moment, it's the fear of doing it at the start. It's tough because there's all these things on your head. But then when I did that survey and they thought we're making that, I was like, this is a free shot.
Yeah.
You know, I can't lose anything here. They already think we're making crazy money. And just be absolutely 100% certain they have people educated on the financials. Really go through P&L training with them and analysis. And, you know, a good thing I like to do is give a sample PL and throw in a red herring. Throw in something that's a bit mad in there. Do you know? Have the electricity cost 3 times what it should be. And then go,
right,
Gary, just see that in there we should be looking at. And we're like, wait a minute. Why is that like that? What happened there? What's going on? So like, even now, again, like our electricity costs, you know, guys are going to tell you, hey, we turn off the AC in there. No one's in there. You know, what are you doing?
It's the 1% effect. It's the trickle down of all, everything compounds good or bad.
Oh, absolutely.
Everything compounds good or bad. So like, if you're compounding little tiny micro habits, like
yeah.
saving just a couple of quid here, a couple of quid there, for a scaling business like yours, it could be a profitable month, not a profitable month.
It's, you know, we had a really good January going by. We gave out a huge bonus pot, tens of thousands of euro out to all the staff. And one of the staff members, he was be honest, how do you feel about that? And I was like, he said to you, yeah. He was like, how do you feel about that? You're giving away a huge amount of money there now this month. And I was like, honestly, yeah, good and bad. Because you're like, whoa, did we overpay this? Do we need to be paying this out? But then I was like, but honestly, really, really? Deep down in my gut, I'm like, we wouldn't have made close to that figure without the collective responsibility, without that kind of model that we're going after. So like, I'm like, this is great. I see that money now. It's like, wow.
Tide lifts all ships though, right? You know, it means you're making more. If they're making more, it means you're making a hell of a lot more. So like, rise and tide lifts all ships.
Yeah. And also we're bootstrapped. So we bought a huge facility now in Dubai Industrial City. So this is our next big move. Where we are at the moment, we've capped out. We just cannot grow anymore where we are. So they see the bigger vision. They know where the money is going. And I'm like, guys, if we get this right, we're going to have such an amazing facility coming up on the horizon. So, you know, you have to give them the North Star too and say, listen, this is where we're going. This is what we're going towards. We're all going to profit on this together. Stay in it together and, you know, just...
So you bootstrap the business to here?
Mm.
How?
Short answer, being as lean as you can.
Because, like, I've seen the facility you have.
there's a bloody lot of stuff in there and a bloody lot of people roaming around.
Yeah.
Like it's, I'm no financial expert, but there's a lot of cash.
A lot of cash went in there. When we moved into that in July 2021, about a quarter of what you've seen was what we started off with. And half of that again was actually in there. It was an old juice company that moved out of it. So I was in, I was like, right, how do I make my business fit this layout? Because I don't have the money to change it. So yeah, we went in there, spent every penny we had. And like, there's pros and cons to bootstrapping. Absolutely, we go through it for night and day, but you have to grow with the company also. You know, like we could take millions in the morning and go and fit out that facility and like, it would be unbelievable. But can we service that amount of people the way we service people now, you know, with that quality and with that service? And like, don't be wrong, things scale up and you have to build things to scale, but like, you can't scale people. So we have to grow our team with the company.
Okay, stay over tease. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Okay. You know, AI is not there yet. You know, we need drivers, we need kitchen staff, we need production staff, operations staff. They all have to be with us on our team, on our level of learning. And that's not even to get into the leadership. And you know, it's really hard to get real top AA players. You have to wait around for them. You have to be very picky to get them. So, you know, if we got all those millions more, I can't go out and hire 100 A players. It's just not possible. It just isn't. We have to get them together and grow with it together. So we have that opportunity now as we bootstrap that we literally were just in charge of the ship. You know, there's no other hands coming over us going, let's go this way or let's go that way, you know?
Yeah, like, you know, private equity firm telling you to scale 30% faster because they need to get out in 5 years.
Imagine I told a private equity firm, hey, I'm going to give away 10% of the profits every month. What do you think? We're in it together. Wouldn't happen. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think it would happen. So, you know, it's really nice to be able to do that together. And listen, maybe in time, maybe we do when we see an opportunity, we know that it can scale the way we want to. Maybe we do. But for now, we are really happy in the space we're in, that we, you know, and the cash flow we have, that we're going to go in to this facility again. We're going to do the same thing we did. We're going to fill out a quarter of it.
Right.
Get it up and running. Get it up and running. Then next year we'll do, you know, another bit. Next year another bit. It's going to be 3 years to really get that facility, 3 to 4 years to really get it where we want it to be. However, it will double the amount of capacity straight away that we currently have. So it gives us room to grow, huge room to grow. Okay. And it has the years on top of it to add to that as well.
How big can this be? Like, how big do you think Fitmeals can be?
Much bigger than what I ever thought it could be, to be honest. As I said, probably regret not thinking bigger when I started, but I think the UAE market itself is going to go exponentially. The amount of expats coming here, the amount of the biggest trend now, not the biggest trend, one of the biggest trends in health is food, is nutrition. One of our big things, we look at our kind of our 3 year roadmap, that like the first thing is that facility. We can't do that without a facility. We can't grow. Second thing then is AI and software. We need to start becoming a company that is able to scale personalized nutrition. I don't know how to do that yet, but I guarantee you someone's going to find out how to do it, and either we do it or someone else will do it. I don't even mind if someone else do it. Great, show me how you did it.
Rise the waves.
Yeah. We have to get to that position. There's a lot of us who are eating foods that don't agree with us, even though they're healthy foods. You know, we can go into that forever. Next big thing too for us is sustainability. We have a vertical farm planned for that warehouse, trying to start growing some of our own produce.
Oh, amazing. That's cool.
Yeah, it's never going to provide everything for us, but we're going to set it on. It goes back to the whole thing about getting people involved in that responsibility. You know, we want to have the best produce coming in the door. So our procurement team are going to look like, hey, this guy's building the vertical farm. We need to make sure the stuff that's coming in, because we are only as good as our suppliers, the food coming in the door. So we have to make sure that is absolutely 100%. It's huge. And sometimes you have to pay really, not just over the odds, nearly double the odds to get a tiny percentage of higher quality in food.
Where do you source your food from?
All over the world, honestly.
Okay.
All over the world. And UAE.
Is that hard?
it's not hard to get it. It's hard to get good quality because the supply chain is so long. A company that you've used for so long can give you the best food in the world, and all of a sudden, it drops. So, like, our procurement team are literally opening up things going, thank you, no thank you, do not send us that again, goodbye, come back with something else, because we have to. Next thing, we really want to expand Fit Meals to offer different sister-like products to people. Like, we have a lot of families on plan, you know, we can definitely offer better nutrition than what a lot of kids maybe are eating. We have a kind of a fit kids vertical. We don't push it hard. It's something we really need to go down and offering different products to people in the nutrition and the health kind of space, let's say. Also, our palate is very Irish, UK, spice bags, Irish beef stew, things like that. We need to expand that to bring in more nationalities. We've on our last customer survey, with 49 different nationalities on our
That's app, really cool.
Which is amazing.
That's class.
But we're not even catering to them.
Okay.
So for me, I'm like, let's get...
There's loads of easy wins, essentially. Well, not maybe not easy, but...
I know what you mean, yeah.
But tangible, clear wins that you can go after.
We can offer a lot more meals in the new facility. Right now, we just can't do that. So that we can expand so much there. Another thing then is new territories. Like, we've done so much work on the business in the last year to change everything we do. You know, all the scaling up, all the open book management, and that all our SOPs, you know, to really grow into this business, we need to now drop that in other territories and go, listen, this is what works. This is what we know how to do.
Okay. Do you mean beyond Dubai?
Beyond the UAE.
Oh.
So right now we serve all the UAE.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. We do the whole thing. Our vans literally go, out we go. UAE is a small country, obviously. It's a hugely densely populated country. Hugely densely populated cities, not country. So, you know, Saudi is a really emerging market. We need to start going over there. What about the UK? What about those kind of places? So that is definitely on a long-term roadmap once we get this facility up and running. And, you know, there are kind of the next big things we need to look at. The biggest thing to get that up and running now is getting top staff in the door and people with serious experience, because no one has 20 years meal prep experience.
That's a good point.
They're just not out there.
Yeah.
So
where do you find them?
You have to try and get someone who's very, number one, the role has to, you know, a specific role, and literally try and get someone who has as much experience in that role as possible and come in and try and apply their knowledge to our industry. And again, it goes back to the platform and the ceiling and go, Gary, this is what I know about this industry, this role. That's everything that's worked for us so far. Can you go in there and find something we're missing, or use your knowledge from...
Do you mean other bigger food brands, or like, do you mean like from tech or both, or what? What do you mean?
Oh, everything.
Everything. Okay.
Tech.
Looking cross industry. Huge.
Yeah. I mean, like, we bring someone in and changes our customer journey, or, you know, ours is huge. Like, the back end of our tech is massive, because all that food, all the produce, the procurement, you know, guys are ordering tons and tons of chicken every day. It has to be down to literally down to a T, you know? So it's very hard to get people, you know, so you can get people who are ordering huge amounts of quantity of food, but they haven't worked in the meal prep industry, you know?
Right.
So you can get someone into kitchen who has done huge quantities of food for maybe a catering company, but they haven't worked in the meal prep industry. So you have to try and get kind of put those two things together and get the right people in the door.
So you kind of hinted at it there, like, new facility is coming online when?
Has to be the end of summer, July, August.
So soon?
Soon, very soon.
Okay. And then expansion all across UAE, Middle East.
Yeah, absolutely. We have to. Others are doing it. It's like going back to when we started. Others were doing it, you know? And now others are doing that too. They're gone. They're like, why aren't we? You know, we've already proved we're worthy, you know? We've already proved we can do this. So let's do it elsewhere.
Is the UAE your home now?
Good question. I think Ireland is always your home, let's say. But it's been a very good home to us. The UAE, it's offered us a huge way of living and a lifestyle and opportunities. You know, I've never owned a business in Ireland. I don't know, could we have grown to where we're growing like that in Ireland. Maybe I'm wrong, but the opportunity in UAE right now is absolutely massive. The growth exponentially going on here is crazy. You've seen here. I mean, how many cranes do you think you've seen in the last?
It's hard to even explain. I think that's why I couldn't understand before I came out here. Like, just you have to see it. You have to understand like the scale at which things are being built. You look at some of the buildings, and I think about your company. And you look at some of the buildings, and they're like 50 stories tall. I'm like, how many people live in there? And I wrote about that yesterday. I wrote a newsletter. I was like, just the density of people. Like, yeah. Dublin's housing crisis could be solved in 2 years by bringing people over here going, look at this.
I need
this. Look at this. Go home and implement.
Yeah.
But then you have people complaining, oh, classic Dublin. Oh, no. Victorian Dublin is going to be ruined. I had this headbanger. He used to complain. He used to live beside us in the property management company. And he complained. He'd write complaint letters, complained to everybody who's developing something. And then he'd get things stuck in the system. Ex-journalist, an absolute nuisance.
But if you were,
I wasn't going to say. But like, there's people like him that stop the country progressing.
It doesn't make sense.
They're NIMBYs who just don't want it there, but don't want it there, but want this, want that. Whereas, like, if you just took the Docklands area.
Yeah, there you go.
And go, right. High rise is permitted here up to like 30 stories in these 30 acres. Okay? Off we go. You solve so many problems. But the problem is now, and I was only down in the North Docks the other day. We're building out all these areas at like 5 stories, 10 stories. Brand new buildings, 10 stories. You're kind of going, this is mental.
What Dubai are very clever at is building communities. As in, like, if you go out to Dubai Hills, for example, they've built a whole community out there. It is unbelievable. And it is a really good example, too, of how to do a mixture of, you know, villas and townhouses with sky rises or whatever you want to call them, let's say, and have a really aesthetically pleasing mini city for all the world.
Yeah.
And Dubai are really good at that. They build mini cities and everything you want is in that area. You know, and they've done that really well.
What we're doing is building more housing estates. We're just building more and more housing estates.
No service.
And now they can't be built affordably and people are going crazy. Developers aren't building them. They're just building the offices. Now the office block is under pressure because people don't want to work in offices anymore. Dublin's in a real strange spot.
Really strange.
Dublin City is in a very, very, very strange spot. Like, I spend a lot of time in there. Socially, it's weird. Antisocially, it's weird. Businesses are struggling. There's no one in there anymore because everyone lives in the suburbs. No one's going to work. You know, we don't really have like people living in the city anymore. So like,
that's not good.
Well, we have to think long term. Like, obviously, I think out here the experts are thinking long term. You can see their vision coming to fruition now.
And to be fair, like once they decide something, this is done. If there's a traffic problem, let's build a road. Let's build a highway there, and it's literally done. And I know there's a lot of paperwork and stuff to go through. Don't be hammering in Ireland that, but literally a road that takes 6 months here will take 10 years in Ireland. And it is very, very frustrating. Again, another thing that they do earlier, they build really nice apartments. I think a lot of people see apartments in Ireland and it's like, how many box rooms can we fit into this apartment?
The apartment we're staying in is huge. We're staying in an Airbnb down in the Docks area and it's huge.
And they're beautiful.
And it's one bed. And but it's massive.
And they have great services. A lot of, you know, the apartments, they have pools in them. They have gyms. They have shared areas. They have playroom. They have, like, really nice out. Like,
where you can live there as opposed to doing a couple of years there.
As opposed to sleeping there. Do you know?
I think Ireland, Europe's doing really well. Europe has, like, a tradition of, you know, living in apartments. Where in Ireland, we don't. And we're not evolving to have it either.
No.
We're just still taking the same idea of, like, oh, just build some apartments without any facilities. Like,
yeah.
You're not living then.
No.
Families aren't living in there.
And again, hands up, I'd be thinking, oh, I don't want to live in the apartment. You know, I've two kids. I don't want to be, you know, but you see some of the apartments where you're like, yeah, I know that could really work.
Well, they're on a house scale as well.
They're on a house scale, exactly.
Like that joke, everything's bigger in America, but like everything's bigger here as well. So when we're sitting down again in 2 years' time, where do you hope to be?
I hope that we have a really strong and future-led facility that we're really, really happy with and that our staff are really happy with, because right now, you know, we are asking them to like really work in a very tight corner. I hope we have expanded to other countries. more than anything, I hope we've put together a really strong team of people, because, you know, if you want to scale up, do all the scaling up and everything you want, but get the right people in and they'll scale it for you. You know, you get the right people in the right seats and they will absolutely scale it for you.
Quick fire round time.
Yes.
My favorite part.
Let's go.
What's the one, actually, I'm going to ask you, what's the one book you recommend? What are the two books you talked about earlier? I think there's more to call them out for the transparency and the scaling.
Yeah. So the book I absolutely loved was The Great Game of Business by Jack Stack. I literally read that from front to cover. I've read it about three times now, but the first time I read it like in a day. And then the second one is Scaling Up by Vern Harnish. And I used Brian Keegan as a coach there to really implement those things better than the way I implemented them. So that there are two books I would encourage any business owner to read.
What's the one book you reckon everyone should read?
Out of those two?
In general, is it one of those two, or is there any one of the other ones you're?
Well, I'm so in the open book management at the moment, I would just tell everyone to read The Great Game of Business. I think I handed it to you going out the door, didn't I? I've copied my
all-made copy. Yeah, I was like, delighted. I came home with a book and my wife's like, what's that? I go, oh, God, give him a book. And I was like, delighted.
I would encourage anyone to read that.
What's something you'd learn the hard way?
Keeping people in a role they're not able to do. It's very easy to do because they're doing it maybe 7 or 8 out of 10. And it's like, oh, Joe, Gary's a really nice guy. He's hardworking. He's humble. And it actually hit me one time before I met a CEO of another company, much, much bigger than Fitness. I was chanting about a person. I was like, listen, I'm struggling here with this person. They're unbelievably hardworking, unbelievably humble, smart, you know, in at the weekends even. I don't want them to be, but they're really trying to put the work just isn't up to scratch. He was like, how long are they working? I was like, 4 or 5 months. He was like, oh, get rid of them. I was like, but like they might get there. And he said a line, and I forget, it was like, 90% will never get there, so do not wait for the other 10. He was German. He was just like, I thought it was a great line. I was like, do you know what? That's actually right, because literally you have 1 out of 10 that like manages to get there. And we're not talking about not giving people chances. People need to settle in and bed into the role. But you do need to call it at some point and go, I really like this person. I really hope it works out. But you know, if you're asking that question after 5-6 months, you probably have the answer.
Okay.
When you do change that and you get the right person in, it's night and day. Instead of worrying about someone, you're being wowed by someone, you know? And it really, you really drop it home to me. So just make sure you are ultra particular about putting the right people in the right seats.
Excellent. Had that experience last week, took some new on the team, and within like 3 hours, I was like, oh my God, unbelievable. Yeah. It was literally 9 days.
Enterprise Ireland helps to support and fund a vibrant startup ecosystem, providing supports, insights, and network connections to the most ambitious Irish startups. From expert advice to raising funding, exploring opportunities in international markets, to strategic planning, Enterprise Ireland is here to support you in those important startup moments. For more information about how Enterprise Ireland can support you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Enterprise Ireland, helping Irish startups go global.
What would you do today if I give you 10 million euro?
10 million euro. I would put half it into the new facility where we're going to need that and more. And then the other half, I think we're really going to start going down the road of biomarkers, especially for food, and going
biomarkers.
Yeah. So like,
what are they?
Let's literally taking people's, you take your blood, you get tested and you see your deficiencies and you cure that with food. It's just like, Gary, you're really low on iron. Let's get this and this into you. Gary, you're really high on this. Let's reduce this. Let's go in and out of that. I'm not saying it's the be all and end all, of course, you know, but it has a huge effect. And like, we're eating a lot of foods that are not good for us. I'm not a nutritionist. I'm not a doctor, but you know, a lot of foods are seriously not good for us and causing a lot of diseases.
And individual as well. Like, actually, it's funny you say that. I go to a functional medicine doctor.
Yeah.
I get my bloods drawn every 6 months,
high
level. And I was like, what's next, Sam? What's next? I'm always trying to drive it on. Like, I'm getting my biological age. I did it 9 years last year, got down 9 years, so the last 5 years.
Brilliant.
I was like, well, I want to drive it more and more and more. What's next, Sam? He goes, I'm going to introduce this test. It'll tell you exactly what foods you should be eating, what piece you should eat. And I was like, done. Sign me up. Get me on. It's the first day. I was like, because I know sometimes I eat them and I'm like, not great after that.
Yeah, yeah.
you can't, someone has picked it out because you just had a meal and you're like, I don't know which part of that wasn't right, but something wasn't right.
Yeah. And it could be a food that's unbelievable for someone else.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think that's important. Yeah.
But like, biomarkers. Trying to, there are a couple things of that. Trying to get to that level of getting that information. Obviously, we're dealing with a lot of medical tests and things like that. And also scaling that are two different things. You know, I mean, how do we scale personalized nutrition? And so that is something that's in my mind every day. I'm like, because this is where we're going.
I will 100%
do. Everything's doable. You know, everything's impossible if someone does it. But maybe using AI and software. And then you don't have to get it 100%. I don't mean that you don't have to do it right. But if I got you eating 80 or 90% of the foods that are good for you, that's a million times better than zero.
Yeah. People look for perfection. The action doesn't exist in life. No. Very rarely does it exist. And you let perfection hold you back from good.
Mm. Absolutely.
Like, good is better than not done at all. Like 80-20. I think about that all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
80% there, 80% there. And then we'll tweak to 20. Right.
And I think 80-20 is the highway to this. Is like, we will get 80% of this for everyone. And that's how we scale it. You know, we start grouping people into similar biomarker results, and then we scale to those different groups, let's say. So that's in my head how we think we'll get there. But that's where I put 5 in the facility and 5 to like, right guys, let's try and figure this out, let's put the data behind it, let's get the software in, let's get the you know, the Lean Six Sigma processes linked in with this, and just go with it.
Love it. I'm going to give you $1 million. You can only invest it in one person or one company, not yourself. Who is it?
I was in Cambridge last year for a scaling up conference, and they had a speaker called Dr. David Sinclair. Did you ever hear of him?
Did he write one of the books on longevity?
Yes. So I actually had never heard of him. I was blown away. I love listening to people that make a complex thing sound so simple. And he explained like the whole molecule. I can't even go through it. They've invented this kind of supplement called NMN. I don't know what the proper name term is for it. And basically what it does is it kind of repairs damaged DNA or cells or things like that within the human body. And, you know, like this guy is the professor of genetics in Harvard Medical School. He's you know, he's no quack, so to speak. And it was just mind-blowing. And right now, I think the FDA have it as approved as an ingredient, but not a supplement, if that makes sense. Okay. So if he can get that over the line, it could be huge for everyone. I would put $1 million into that. I'd be like, you take that, do what you're doing, because it's unbelievable. And you know, everyone can benefit from it.
If you were starting a new business in 2025, what would you do?
Starting a new business in 2025. I would, maybe cheating a small bit here, but I would go down the preventative illness route with biohacking and using food as medicine and things like that. Not food doesn't cure diseases, but it certainly does cause some. I would definitely open up that, like, you know, we should be doing a lot more for preventative illnesses. I think I can't remember who said it, was like, people are literally going to look back in 20 years time and look at things we died from and go, oh God, that was so preventable. No more than we do now. We look back at things 30 years ago, oh, there's a vaccine for that now. Or God, you know,
smoking belts.
There you go.
Loads of easy examples. Oh, you're just like, oh, that's what are we doing?
Crazy. So I think, you know, we've looked at the cure at the moment. For cancers, and looked at the cure and all that. Now we need to be dealing with the cause and going, we need to be getting, and not just eliminating things, you know, eliminating smoking, but like actually bringing things on, bringing, you know, proper health and nutrition and food into your body so that you kind of some way help yourself with preventing food.
Or food is toxic. So much food on the shelf is toxic. Even last night when I was trying to get order food, it was like 99% of the stuff is junk. Like, it's just, I'm very careful what it be.
Yeah, you're
very picky. So much of it's junk, loaded with sugar, loaded with salts, loaded with fat. And yeah, it tastes really good because it's loaded with bad stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I agree with you. Again, Tan, related, what's something you believe other people find strange or strongly disagree with?
Open book management.
First time I've had it, so yeah, I would
agree. Do you know what, actually, I know I've spoken to her, actually more fascinated by it than, but I have not heard anyone else I've talked to implement it. They're like, wow, gee, I don't know if I'll do that now, but
I'm dying to see what the reaction this episode will be.
Yeah,
I think it'll stimulate a lot of people, but I would love to know if anyone implements it after this. Do get in touch with me.
There's a lot in it. I've fast forwarded through the, you know, a lot of it there, but it is I actually really enjoy it. And do you know what, before as well, you know, when you're working and you've like the budget or, you know, a lot of figures on your screen and you're like, you know, make sure no one walks in and sees this. Now, apart from salaries, we don't actually, we have a salary file, what the total is. We don't tell what everyone's salary is. But honestly, with the pathway to leadership document we have and the tiers, people have a fair idea anyhow. But now it's just so open. I can literally just like open up the budget, open up the P&L on the desk and walk away. It's actually great freedom. Do you know what? I can just talk to people and go, hey, do you see that percentage increase in the cost of sales last week? Well, what happened there? What do you think we can do? And they can explain it or they can't explain, and we try and, you know, work together. Or instead of, you know, me and three or four others and accounts trying to analyze things, people are coming to go, hey, did you see this? That's not right. We're even like, that's too low. That we're missing something here. So everyone is becoming a financial analyst. Everyone's becoming a business owner and bringing it into you. So I'd be like, release the figures, let them go. People think you're making much more than what you are anyhow, so you have nothing to lose.
What's been your worst investment?
My worst investment. We opened a fake cafe and it was brilliant. It was so nice. The food was great. The staff were great. It was doing okay.
Did you say a fake cafe?
No, a fit cafe.
A fit cafe. Yeah. What's a fake cafe?
And it was a nice business, but it took so much time off us. And it was like the 80-20. This thing was taking 80% of our time and bringing in 20% of the revenue, and not even that. And it was a strategic mistake on my behalf. And if it was back again and we really thought it out and had my strategy plan, we wouldn't have gone near it. A big thing what we're doing going forward is that, you know, we either introduce a product that our current customers like, you know, or we introduce our product to new customers. We don't do new customers, new product, because we're going into an entirely different market. And in my head, it was like, cafe, food, we're in the food business.
I can see how you got there. I was nodding along.
It's easy. Yeah, sure. Why do we do it? But it's not. Cafe customers are completely different to meal prep plan customers. And the food is completely different also. It's not, you know, we're doing scale food. This is a la carte out the menu. So
that's a good learning there.
It was a real good learning on going new product, new customer. You know, don't ever do it. Make sure it's either the same customer and new product for them,
okay,
you know, or it's the same product and it's a new customer.
Good rule in business.
Has to be one or the other, do you know?
Okay. What's been your best investment?
My best investment. We bought two pieces of equipment a couple of years ago that literally drained our bank account. They were a tilting pan and a boiling pan. I'm not from a kitchen background. These are huge, big pieces of machinery. They were like €80,000 for the two of them each. And I was like, are we sure we need these pieces of equipment? This is a deposit for a house. Like, I'm like, this is a really nice house. I was like, this is crazy. And our head chef was like, we need it. It's going to do this, and this for us. And literally it just plows food through it at a really high quality. It just, you know, it just cooks food in abundance at such a high quality that it really, it's paid itself back 10 times over. But you know, when something's not broke, don't fix it. And like, our kitchen is running fine and a guy comes in, let's spend €80,000. And I'm like, let's not, you know? So
sometimes you gotta take the lead.
Yeah. Looking back, that was probably one of our best. Sorry, I that's our second investment. Our best investment is coming up. It's the new facility. We've spent a huge sum of money to get that, and we've acquired it. We bought the facility, so you know, we're not renting out a huge facility and then someone tells us to leave.
Yeah.
So different scale of investment, but that's going to be our big golden nugget. I think going forward, it's going to be our anchor that literally is like, this is going to propel us up.
What's your final piece of advice for any entrepreneur listening or aspiring entrepreneur listening?
I know I've said it already. I suppose the normal thing, you're going to have to work like crazy. You are. There's no two ways out about it. Be passionate about it, because you're going to be in this for a very long time, down in the weeds for a long time before you get to come up out of it. Be very particular about the people you bring in. Be unwavering in that they have to take all these boxes. Do not hire until you find the best person. It is easy to just say, do you know what, he was okay, we need the person, let's get him in. Just be very, very particular about that.
Owen, thank you so much for line and chat. Learned a lot today.
I hope so. I've learned a lot in the last year and a half or so. So I've learned a lot in the last 5 years. What am I saying? Good times.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
People learn more about you and Fit Meals?
Probably my LinkedIn. I'm not busy.
Full name?
Yeah.
Which is?
Owen Cantwell, EOYN.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Irish. You know.
And then Fit Meals?
Fit Meals is on social media, on LinkedIn. Our website, fitmeals.ae.
F-I-T-T.
F-I-T-T. We're different than everyone else.
Yeah.
So you'll find a lot about us there, let's say.
Owen, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Gary.